There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
You want to
keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. This is a special weekend edition interview podcast, August 1st, 2009. Nasser, welcome to the studio. Introduce this outstanding historical driver, team owner.
Well, this conversation is with Henri Pescarolo, one of the true legends of French motor racing. And his father was a doctor by profession, and that's the profession he was going to follow till he discovered the beautiful world of motor racing. And he was associated with Matra racing program from their early years. Drove for them in sports car racing, Formula 2 and Formula 1. And it was at Le Mans where he really made his name with them because he won 3 years in a row, 72, 73, 74. And then later on, he had a win with Porsche also. And, you know, also want to thank his wife, Madi, very much because this was arranged through her help and cooperation. And Henri Pescarolo is also a very huge, serious flying enthusiast, flies quite a bit. And at Le Mans, where this conversation took place, his team was also running a separate car for Peugeot. So I would like to thank Mr. Henri Pescarolo once again, and also his wife, Madi, and I hope listeners enjoy this conversation. Thank you.
Okay, I'm here at Le Mans with the legend of Le Mans, Mr. Henri Pescarolo. Henri, first of all, thank you for your time. How are you today, sir?
Very well, we are ready. We had a good practice yesterday and ready today for the qualification.
You have raced in Formula One at places like Monza, Spa and Nürburgring. What makes Le Mans so special for you?
I was very lucky when I was driving at the beginning of my career because in the team in which I was, that's Matra Sport, we had in the same time Formula, prototype, rally cars, hill climbs car, so we were doing everything, you know. So Formula 3, Formula 2, I had the best car and I won all the championship. Formula 1 for the first year, I had a car which was not so good but fantastic result for my first year, you know, third in Monaco, fourth time in the points for a first year, it was a young driver, it was good. But after that I had no competitive Formula 1 cars. It was not so interesting, you know, with Surtees, with Frank Williams at the beginning, with BRM and so. So in the same time, I had the best car in prototype. So I had fantastic result with the prototype. So when you are doing endurance and when you are doing prototype, the most famous race is Le Mans. So at the end, it became the most important race for me too.
Three wins in a row with Matra and one with Porsche. Which one was the most satisfying for you?
I think with Matra, you know, because I had the opportunity which never had before except Beltoise and me. We start our career at the same time that a new manufacturer was starting his career. I mean, we started in 1965 at the same time than Matra. And we grew all together until the end, which was Formula 1 and the prototype. So we did tremendous effort for 10 years, you know, to be able to win Le Mans and to win the World Championship in Formula 1. So the first win in Le Mans with Graham Hill, that was absolutely fabulous. And in the same time, I had two other wins. In the 72, 73, 74. So that was fantastic because it was Matra. But with Porsche, it was very good too because it was 10 years later. So it was very difficult to imagine that perhaps I could win again. So that was very good, and that was good because I was with Arnold Just, who was a good friend of me, against which I have been driving when he was driver, and with him I won Le Mans as a team manager for him, so that was very good.
You mentioned Graham Hill. How did you find him as a person and a driver?
Oh, it was, he was a legend already when, you know, originally I was not so fun to be with him because, you know, he was already a legend. He won Indianapolis, he won Formula One Championship, and I was not sure he was able to take any risks in Le Mans. You know, when you start in the night and it's raining, it's very dangerous. So I wanted to be with an experienced driver, but he was not so old than him, you know. It's difficult for me to say that now, but I was not convinced that he was coming really to win. And that was fantastic because he really came to win, and the time he has been the most fantastic was in the night on the rain, you know, and his experience was tremendous. He drove beautifully, and we won because of him, you know. He was fantastic, and that was a big honor for me to be with such a teammate, you know.
Many years ago, you had a teammate for only one race who was not a legend but became a very big legend. How was the experience of having Ayrton Senna as a young man as a teammate?
That's funny because nobody knew about that, you know, and since a few years now, some pictures of us, you know, appear, you know, but nobody remembers that Senna raced with me, with Reinhold Joest at the Nürburgring. And it was quite strange because he was very young, completely unknown, and his team manager was Domingo Piedad, you know, and he brings Senna to Reinhold Joest and said him, you must try him, he looks very good. So Senna was very timid, shy, you know, he stayed at the, in the box speaking to nobody. And as soon as he was in the car, poof, he was the fastest, you know, that was fantastic.
Great. Okay, your team has a Peugeot turbo diesel for this year's race. How did this deal come about? Did you contact them or did Peugeot call you?
Not at all. I worked with them 2 years ago, you know, when they were supposed to leave the rally and to come to Endurance. Jean-Pierre Nicolas asked me to cooperate with him to try to help him to come in such a new specialty, you know. So I worked with them for 3 months, and they asked me to become team manager, but they asked me at the same time to stop my team and to do not use anybody of my team. And my team, that's my family. So I said to them, no, I cannot, you know, I will continue with my team. And so I was not thinking that it could happen anymore, you know. And with Olivier Kennel, you know, which is somebody who is very clever, he thought so there will be 5 Audis in Le Mans, 3 official, 2 R10. We have only 3 cars. So the number of cars is important in Le Mans. So he said, we are able to build a 4th car. So we must give him to the best team, and he chose me, so that was a big honor for me, and it's very important for me to prove that Pescarolo Sport team is able to run such a car, which everything is completely new for us, you know, it's a big, big diesel car, and we have to be competitive straight away, you know, it's very interesting for us, it's a big honor. And it's also very important for a private team to be closer with a manufacturer. You know.
Now, before racing, you were on your way to becoming a doctor like your father. What made you decide motor racing would be a better therapy?
No, you know, to be a doctor, you must have... it must be a dream for you, you know, because it's a very special job, you know, and I was not really dreaming to be a doctor like my father. But anyway, I became a student in a doctor, you know, and but I was interested in planes, I was interested in cars and everything, and I had the opportunity to participate at the first promotional races which were organized in France with the Lotus 7. So I entered that. I didn't know exactly what I could do, and I won. So after I had the choice, either try to become a racing driver or to become doctor, and I chose to try to become a racing driver.
Yeah, you mentioned the races with Lotus 7 in 1964. Two of your teammates, drivers you raced against were Johnny Servoz-Gavin and Patrick Depailly. Can you please tell a little bit about these two drivers, how they were?
There was also François Sever, but he didn't participate to the races, but he participated to the selection. But his father didn't want him to race, you know. So, of course, Servoz-Gavin and Depailly were, as you know, fantastic drivers, and they were already fantastic when we started together. You know, it was they were good friends. They became good friends. They were very quick, and it was nice competition with them. You know, it was very good souvenirs.
Now, Johnny Servoz-Gavin was your Matra teammate, and he developed a playboy reputation. How good was he when he was serious about racing?
When he was serious, he was one of the best. You know, he was really, it was a pure talent, you know. He was very quick, very easily quick, you know. But he was not so serious, as you said. And he had some problem with Ken Tyrrell, because Ken Tyrrell wanted a serious driver. And he was only, but it's something very important. He was only a very quick driver. But you know, that was the period where Formula One became very professional, with sponsors and so, and he was not serious enough for that.
Now, Jean-Luc Lagardère, the gentleman who started the Matra Racing team, how was your experience in dealing with him? Was he a very tough boss, or was he good to deal with?
Yes, he was a really tough boss, but I think he was able to create around him a real spirit of the team. You know, we were called the Matracien. You know, that means our life was Matra. Just because Jean-Luc Lagardère was such a good manager that we were ready to be killed for him, you know. But he was also in the same time able to do something very brutal, you know. When in 71 he pushed me away of the team after a fantastic first year in Formula 1, as I told you, you know, third in Monaco, three or four times in the points, just because he considered Beltoise was the second driver. He took Chris Amon from Ferrari and pushed me away with no sentiment at all, you know, with no... that was very bad, you know. He destroyed me completely, you know, so he was able to do that.
There was a driver who was killed during testing, Robbie Webber. Did you know him, and were you there when he had his accident?
Yes, we fought in Formula 3 for a very long time, so I knew him very well. And I have been chosen to race in Barcelona in single-seater, because Lagardère thought I was able to win, so he stayed in Le Mans for the practice. It could have been the contrary, you know.
Now, in 1968, you moved up to Formula 2 with Matra. How big was the difference in the level of competition between Formula 3 and Formula 2 drivers?
The biggest difference is in that time, in Formula 2, there was Formula 1 drivers. You know, the first time I raced in Formula 2, there was Jim Clark behind me, Graham Hill, Chris Amon, which were around me, so that was the biggest difference, but, excuse me. And also the big difference was it was a car which was a lot more powerful than the Formula 3, you know, but it's not really so difficult when you are a good driver to have straight away double of torque and double of power. But the biggest difference is we were competing against the good Formula 1 drivers, you know, in Formula 2. That was very interesting.
In 1968, Formula 2 race, Heat 1 in Hockenheim, you finished second and Jim Clark was killed. Who gave you the news, and what was the mood of the drivers after they got the news?
Of course, Jim Clark was completely a legend, you know, so for me it was very sad, you know, to know that. But in that time, every weekend, a driver was killed, you know, that we were used to that, you know. So it was Jim Clark, it's a pity, but I had so many other drivers killed around me that in that time that was racing, you know.
Okay, your Grand Prix debut came in Canada at the Mont-Tremblant circuit. In those days in Formula One, was the pressure as high as it is these days?
It always a big pressure for a driver to be in Formula One because there are not many cars to drive and many drivers who want to drive. So you have, first of all, the pressure to stay in Formula One. That means you must be perfect in the car, you must be competitive, you must do no mistakes at all. And you are working for a manufacturer, so when it's about the same pressure than now, you know, it was big competition. It was very important for Matra to have good results. It was very important for me to try to stay with Matra, so to have good results too. So the pressure is about the same.
You mentioned you had a podium in Monaco in a Formula One race. How does that podium in a Formula One race compare to outright victory at Le Mans?
I very often said that I would have preferred to win three Grand Prix than three Le Mans. But now, I'm not sure that I was clever to say that, because to win Le Mans, it's something which is really fantastic. There is only one Le Mans per year. There are 18 Grand Prix per year, you know. So what I regret really is to do not have that I had not as good cars in Formula One that I have a good car in the prototype, because I was sure I was able to win also in Formula One.
You in racing, you've also driven for Frank Williams and Ron Dennis. How are these guys to deal with? They have a very, very tough reputation.
Frank Williams was exactly the same from what it is now, what he is now. You know, it's a fantastic guy. You know, it was really a pleasure to be with him. Even if in that time he had no money at all, it was very difficult, you know, to race for him, because he was always looking for money. But he was already a fantastic manager. He has been later, you know. The organization was perfect, the car were perfect with no money, and the guy was fantastic. I was living with him in England, you know, and it's one of my best souvenirs, you know, to be with Frank. Ron Dennis is exactly the contrary. That was really the worst team manager I had. He was very good about organization, very good to prepare a car, very good to run a team, but very bad with drivers, you know. He all the money was coming from France with two French drivers, and he was doing everything to give the best engine, the best car to what's the name, teammate, Tim Schenken, you know. So Tim Schenken had always what was the best, and we had always what was the worst, you know. He didn't like the French, but he was clear, you know. He always said that he preferred Schenken, and he was doing everything for him and not for us, you know. So all the big problem he had in the future, they were already present at that time, you know. You know, he had so much problem with his drivers in Formula One. It's exactly the same, you know. It was exactly the same when he started.
Okay, last question. According to your website, you and Patrick Fortique set the record for the fastest crossing of the Atlantic from New York to Paris in 1984. What is more thrilling, flying in the air or flying at Mulsanne without the chicanes in a blue, beautiful Matra?
Originally, I wanted to be a pilot. I wanted to be a fighter pilot, you know, to be a... I became a racing driver, but my passion is still there. You know, I'm flying all the time. I got an helicopter, and it's also very, very interesting. What I have done with Patrick Fortic, it's not only the record on the Atlantic with Malibu. It was also to beat Howard Hughes' record around the world, you know, with Lockheed 18, the same plane than Howard Hughes. I like so much to fly, and I like so much to try to beat records and competition, that I cannot say I prefer one to the other. One is my job, the other one is my passion. Now both are my passion, but I had about, of course, it has been more important for me what I have done with the cars, because that was my job, that was what I wanted to do. But in a plane, I am really in the right place too.
Finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly? We have listeners everywhere around the world, including France.
The message is only the same, you know, it's to try to, during his life, to try to have in the same time the job which is your passion, you know, and with that you are happy.
Thank you very much, sir.
Henri Pescarolo, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.